I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. Ladies and gentlemen, boy, I'll tell you, we're really busy around here. I don't know what you're doing where you're at, but if the busyness that goes on around here nowadays is any indication of the busyness around the country, things are just escalating beyond reason. So pay attention tonight. I've got an awful lot of stuff to give you. I think a lot of it is very important. I'm also going to talk about Veritas tonight. So if you don't know anything about Veritas, make sure that you stay tuned. But in the meantime, I want to recite this. And I'm going to recite this every night at the beginning of the broadcast because it's just good. It's the best I've heard in years. It's the best new poetry that I've ever seen in my life. And besides that, I've got to read it until I learn how to read it right. I don't think I did it justice last night. I may not do it justice tonight. But eventually, I'm going to get it to where I feel like it's right. And then maybe, just maybe, you'll get the message of it. So few will choose the narrow road where freedom's fighters' blood has flowed in honor's battle episode to summon forth the strength of will to stand. And most will walk the well-worn path to near encounter conflict's wrath, considering not the aftermath as chains are placed about their feet and hands. It's not my problem, most will say. I don't have time to help today. Upon the morrow, haps I may. Consider all your words and theories fine. So who will rush into the breach to extricate from danger's reach and to teach with edifying speech? You, with courageous hearts, must hold the line. And who will say, I'm here, send me to offer all for liberty, who'd rather die than slavery see within this land so grand and fine a place? Beware. If liberty you dream, the cost exacted is extreme, yet still I know, exceed, and deem risk's ransom worth sweet freedom's one embrace. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is astounding. A Federal Bureau of Investigation explosives expert testifying in the bombing plot trial of Egyptian cleric Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman and nine others said on Monday that he was told to change his reports in favor of the prosecution. Federal Bureau of Investigation agent Frederick Whitehurst said he disagreed with the final report prepared by the FBI that was to have been used by the government at the trial of four men accused in the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. Quote, "There was a great deal of pressure put upon me to bias my interpretation," end quote, Whitehurst said in federal court in Manhattan. He said his superiors told him, and I quote, "not to provide alternative theories that could be used by the defense. I was told not to give the defense anything that could be used," end quote. So much for justice. Whitehurst told the court that the initial reports about the presence of urea nitrate were false. He said it so upset him that false testimony would be offered that he went to the bathroom, urinated into a beaker, and went to extremes to demonstrate that false information was being offered. Whitehurst said he formulated urea nitrate from his own urine and placed that sample with others taken from the bomb scene. He said the FBI technician failed to notice the difference between the samples. Whitehurst said he was so upset at the strong pressure being put on him by FBI members that he wrote two memos to the Inspector General about the matter. Whitehurst, who holds a doctorate in chemistry from Duke University, was called as a defense witness by lawyers for Fares Khalafala and Mohammed Sella, two men who have been on trial since January with the Egyptian cleric. Abdel Rahman and nine other men are charged with planning the World Trade Center blast and plotting to bomb the United Nations and bridges and tunnels leading into New York. They're also accused of planning the 1990 murder of Jewish militant Rabbi Meir Kahane and conspiring to kill Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak when he was visiting the United States. Quote, "I was criticized openly and told I could hurt the prosecution case, that the prosecution was going to circumvent my testimony by having another expert testify," said Whitehurst, who described himself as the dean of the FBI Explosives School in Virginia, end quote. Four men were convicted in 1994 for the explosion at the Trade Center that killed six people and injured more than 1,000 others. The four were sentenced to 240 years in prison. And now, folks, get this. You're not going to believe your ears. After the Trade Center trial, Whitehurst, the FBI explosives expert, a PhD, was transferred to the Paint Chip Analysis Division of the Federal Bureau of Investigation as a trainee. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Now, I want to draw to your attention a very important date that's coming up. This year, 1995, in October, the 13th of October falls upon Friday. The Pope is scheduled to arrive in the United States on October the 6th. 7 days later, which is the number of completion, he will be making a speech in public on Friday, October the 13th, the anniversary date of the destruction of the Knight Templars by the Pope and the King of France in the year 1307. It would not surprise me. I have nothing to do with it. Haven't heard anything. Don't know anyone who's planning anything like this. But I have studied the mysteries for so long, and in particular the Knights Templar. The Pope arrives on the 6th. 7 days later is the number of completion. 7 and 6 is 13. Friday the 13th, the anniversary date of the destruction of the Knights Templars. It would not surprise me if there was an assassination attempt upon the Pope. And the reason that I'm saying this over the air is because if I reveal it publicly, maybe it will not happen. But what I know of the Magi, Horus, the full body of initiates, the adepts of the mysteries, this is exactly what they would do. If they were to do that, ladies and gentlemen, coupled with the big blast in Oklahoma City and the current scare of terrorism in the airlines and train stations across the country, which I believe is total 100% bullshit fabrication, if there were an assassination attempt upon the Pope, that would be all that it would take. It would be the end of liberty in this country. It would be the end of firearms ownership for anyone. It would be the beginning of a civil war as patriots resisted what would be sure to come. So I'm saying this tonight with no knowledge that anything is going to happen on October the 13th, but with full knowledge and understanding of the history of the mystery religion of Babylon and the Knights Templars in particular, who are the modern day Freemasons, and the Rose and Cross and all the others, the ancient order, the Rosicruci. I know exactly what they have done in the past. I know how they act upon symbols and with symbolism. And I know that if they have a chance, they won't pass that date by. So maybe by doing this, nothing will happen and everybody out there will get a chance to say that Bill Cooper is a hysterical ninny because on October the 13th, nothing happened. And if nothing happens on October the 13th, folks, you can call me whatever you wish. If this revelation does anything to stop any act by these insane idiots who believe that they are God, then I will be happy. You can throw rocks at my house, whatever you want to do. I don't care. If this is enough, just the public revelation, then I will be happy. Next, Edie Smith is at it again. She was, let me see. I got this off the internet today. And I've talked about Edie Smith before on this broadcast, and also I've talked about her in Veritas. She raised questions as to the whereabouts of the ATF on the morning of 19 April 1995. And caused quite a stir. And just recently, she's caused another stir. She stated that United States Attorney Pat Ryan told her that all agents were at a golf tournament in Shawnee, Oklahoma that morning, the same thing that our investigators were told, but that after she had made her original inquiries as to the whereabouts of the ATF, she had two messages, with one being from a Dallas, Texas agent who said there were three agents in the building. And the next message was from a local agent saying that there were five agents in the building. The messages were left on her answering machine consecutively. So the ATF doesn't even know how many agents were in the building. And they're trying to BS Edie Smith. Our people investigated the golf tournament and found out no such animal. It was a lie. They just had blatantly lied about that. Edie Smith also stated that of the nearly 10,000, get this, folks, of the nearly 10,000 pieces of mail diverted to the Red Cross, run by Elizabeth Dole of Kansas, whose salary is over $150,000 a year, and she is the wife of presidential candidate Bob Dole, some 80% was missing.
all letters and money directed to Edie Smith personally, and the other 20% had just letters with no cash. The Red Cross, headed by Elizabeth Dole, is taking the money being sent to the survivors of the Oklahoma City bombing. Want to elect him president? 33rd degree Freemason, Bob Dole. She had asked the Red Cross, this is Edie, had asked the Red Cross to assist her in medical costs to help her to save her tubal, to help her to have her tubal ligation reversed. You see, it was done after the birth of Colton, who was three, whom was named in the Nichols-McVeigh indictment along with brother Chase, too, neither of whose deaths were deemed worthy of charges by the FBI in their indictments, which named only eight federal agents. The reason the FBI named only eight federal agents may be that if any citizens were named in the federal case, it would open up the door to citizens having legal standings in the proceedings and would blow the cover off the FBI's misleading assertions. Edie Smith cannot have children now due to the tube tie, and her two kids were murdered in the 19th April 1995 bombing. Actually, bombings. There was more than one bomb that went off that day, at least two that we're aware of. The second may have been a whole bunch of bombs going off at the same time. The Red Cross denied her any assistance after emptying between 5,000 to 10,000 pieces of her personal mail of all cash and checks. Yet in today's USA Today, there's a full-page appeal for more cash on page 14C. Edie Smith said there were now over 200 groups collecting cash in the name of the victims who are uniformly being denied help. Now I want to know, since when can anyone open someone else's personal mail and take anything out of it? That's a federal crime. That's a felony. Why isn't Edie Smith pressing charges against these people? What's going on here, ladies and gentlemen? This is serious stuff. This country is so far out of whack, ladies and gentlemen, that maybe we should have let Linda Thompson take the militia and march on Washington. Sometimes I regret that it was me that talked her out of it. It was better as an intelligence-gathering organization. But now that all this other stuff is taking place, folks, I'm not so sure that I was right in doing that. And I'm not so sure I would talk her out of it again. However, I happen to know that the final word on the matter is whoever fires the first shot loses. So even if she did march with militia to Washington, they could not do anything other than march. Period. A local Oklahoma City station A local Oklahoma City station, not Mike Carpenter, KWTV from past reports, but likely KFOR, is going to carry a shadow man interview. That's where somebody is blacked out, you can't see their face, and their voice is disguised, and they're going to have a shadow man interview this week, showing a profile of a man whose wife was in the bombed Mura building on the morning of April the 19th, and who approached a blue-jacketed ATF agent, not known to him, and he knew most of the agents, as did his wife, who worked there for 10 years. The story, said Smith, will have testimony from the man who was told by the unknown jacketed agent moments after the bombings that all ATF personnel were being debriefed, whatever that means. Smith stated she was told by the building manager of the Mura building that the Oklahoma City Police Bomb Squad had cleared the building around 7:30 a.m. the morning of the bombings after a bomb threat and were sitting in the parking lot across the street from the Mura building at 9:02 Central Daylight Time when the bombs blew up. Now, I have no confirmation of that. These are all statements by Edie Smith. who has suffered a lot. She lost her only two children in that bombing, and she is angry, to say the least. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't even dare think about how angry I would be if the same thing had happened to Pooh. I don't even dare let the thought enter my mind. So I can't even say that I even remotely understand how she feels, because I won't even let myself think about it. Now I want you to listen to this very carefully. In Boston, on April the 20th, National Guard units seeking to confiscate a cache of recently banned weapons were ambushed on April the 19th by elements of a paramilitary extremist faction. Military and law enforcement sources estimate that 72 were killed and more than 200 injured before government forces were compelled to withdraw. Speaking after the clash, Massachusetts governor declared that the extremist faction, which was made up of local citizens, has links to the radical right-wing tax protest. And of course, it's a movement. The governor blamed the extremist for recent incidents of vandalism directed against the Internal Revenue officers. The governor, who described the group's organization as criminals, issued an executive order authorizing the summary arrest of any individual who has interfered with the government's efforts to secure law and order. The military raid on the extremist arsenal followed widespread refusal by the local citizenry to turn over recently outlawed assault weapons. The governor issued a ban on military-style assault weapons and ammunition earlier this week. Now, this decision followed a meeting in early April between government and military leaders at which the governor authorized the forcible confiscation of illegal arms. One government official, speaking on condition of anonymity, pointed out that none of these people would have been killed had the extremists obeyed the law and turned over their weapons voluntarily. Government troops initially succeeded in confiscating a large supply of outlawed weapons and ammunition. However, troops attempting to seize arms and ammunition in Lexington met with resistance from heavily armed extremists who had been tipped off regarding the government's plans. During a tense standoff in Lexington's town park, National Guard Colonel Francis Smith, commander of the government operation, ordered the armed group to surrender and return to their homes. The impasse was broken by a single shot, which was reportedly fired by one of the right-wing extremists. 8 civilians were killed in the ensuing exchange. Ironically, the local citizenry blamed the government forces rather than the extremists for the civilian deaths. Before order could be restored, armed citizens from surrounding areas had descended upon the guard units. Colonel Smith, finding his forces overmatched by the armed mob, ordered a retreat. The governor has called upon citizens to support the state and national joint task force in its effort to restore law and order. The governor has also demanded the surrender of those responsible for the planning and leading of the attack against the government troops. Samuel Adams, Paul Revere, and John Hancock, who have been identified as ringleaders of the extremist faction, remain at large. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you tell me, was this 1775, or 1995, or 1999, or what? Is not the government today the same type government of that time period? The principles, motives, reasoning, and actions are exactly the same. And it has already happened to a lesser extent at Waco, Ruby Ridge, and in average American homes across this nation. Taxes? The nature of taxing us, the public, is the same then and now, only you pay much more now than they ever dreamed of then. Taxation without representation and oppressive taxes, aren't they killing us, the public also? No, I understand. We live in a more humanistic society now. We are more knowledgeable and socialistically learned, right? We are too advanced a people and society to have weapons and protest taxes, right? We are to let the authorities protect us from the vermin, right? Ladies and gentlemen, we are sheeple. We are to be led by people of knowledge and humanity who have experience that the average person doesn't dare protest to. After all, the average Joe is just too stupid to know anything. Right? Isn't it the liberal socialist who proudly proclaim their knowledge and that they know best for the sheeple? Now, everyone remember, we must follow orders precisely since we are too dumb to think and decide for ourselves. Now, what happens to someone, the average Joe, who thinks he can think and do for himself? This is an original tome by Michael Lamb, and I thank him for writing that. Shines some light on the matter. Just in case there are some real people out there who think that what I wrote really happened on April the 19th of this year, I was talking about the Battle of Lexington, which was the beginning of the Revolutionary War, which brought this nation into existence. So don't go off the deep end. Because those liberals aren't totally wrong, there are a lot of sheeple out there. Now listen to this. Incredible. This is going to frost you, folks, and if it doesn't, it's going to surprise the hell out of me. I've revealed to you on this broadcast long, long time ago the 22 OV-10 Bronco counterinsurgency aircraft that have been sold by the military to the BATF. Recently, Soldier of Fortune discussed it in their September 95 issue, months and months and months after I revealed it, maybe a year and a half after I revealed it to the world. Everybody is way behind this broadcast. There are, by the ATF's admission, 12 operational OV-10Ds and another 10 for spare parts. Which means they're either too cheap to buy spare parts, or they're trying to pull the wool over our eyes, and they really have 22. But aircraft are very complicated pieces of machinery, very technical, require constant repair and attention. So at any one time, it is possible that a bunch of novices like the BATF could have 10 aircraft down for maintenance. Two of the aircraft, tail numbers N, as in November, 471AW, that's November, 471 Alpha Whiskey, and November 475 Alpha Whiskey, received mechanical and paintwork in late June in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Another with a similar paint scheme with tail numbers November 439 Alpha Whiskey was inspected in Nashville, Tennessee. Others are believed to be based in Houston, California and Washington, D.C. The Federal Aviation Administration registry reveals, listen to this, that tail numbers are registered to a company called American Warbirds Incorporated of 5-1 Metropolitan Court, Gaithersburg, Maryland. The address is located in suburban Washington, D.C., at the dead end of an industrial park cul-de-sac and not located near an airport. American Warbirds has no phone numbers listed with directory assistance, and a Gaithersburg airport spokesman had never heard of the company. It is not incorporated in Maryland, Delaware, or the District of Columbia, nor has it filed the required paperwork to legally do business in Maryland.
Tail numbers, November 471 Alpha Whiskey through November 477 Alpha Whiskey are assigned to American Warbirds, and all are OV-10Ds. If the seven of the above aircraft are operational, where are the other five? An OV-10 had been seen in Nashville, Tennessee, with the tail number November 439 Alpha Whiskey, and local aviation sources identified it as a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms aircraft. A check with the Federal Aviation Administration Registry indicates this number is not assigned to any aircraft anywhere. Very interesting. Thank you, Linda Thompson. Well, let's take a break. Don't go away. I'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, the hour of the time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. The only people that I know that I would trust to sell me anything called real money, because I've checked. And I mean I've really checked before I would accept a sponsor for this program. And I know that these are good people. They care. If they didn't care, they certainly wouldn't be backing me, because I'm just about as politically incorrect as exists upon the face of this earth. Nobody, and I mean nobody, wants to hear the truth. But if you listen to this broadcast, that's all you're going to get, is the truth. Or as close to it as we can get, because sometimes it's elusive at best. And we tell you, don't believe anything you hear unless you check it out for yourself. Listen to everyone. Read everything. Believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own efforts. If you're too lazy to make the effort, don't you dare criticize anybody else, because you're the real sheeple. And sooner or later, you're going to come to your senses and realize that you're not protected, and the only thing that's going to help you, or at least one of the things I should have said, one of the things that you need that can help you is some real money, because when everything comes crashing down, and it will, nobody, and I mean nobody, is going to take that funny Mickey Mouse crap that you got in your pocket that's printed whole cloth, counterfeit by the Federal Reserve. It says that it's dollars, and it's not dollars according to the law. It says that it's notes, but it's not notes whatsoever. And if you buy something with those pieces of paper, that funny money, you don't own what you bought. You're going to find that out in just a moment. So if you'd like to get your hands on some real money and see what it feels like, believe me, folks, if you've never held a gold coin in your hands, you have missed out. Really missed out. Same for silver dollars. Used to be a big thrill to go to Las Vegas and put a silver dollar in a slot machine. And if you didn't win, you really felt like you lost something. Why do you think they converted the tokens?
because you can put tokens in there all day long, and you don't feel like you've lost anything until you go home and figure out you haven't got anything left to pay your bills. And then when you pay your bills, or when you buy something with what you've got, you don't own it. You're going to find that out in just a second. Call 1-800-289-2646. Talk to the good people at Swiss America Trading. Good buddy Gene Miller or any of the other good people there. Get your hands on some real money. Tell them that you're a steady listener to the Hour of the Time, and you'll get red carpet VIP treatment, I guarantee you, and ask for the current newsletter. They'll send it right out to you. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. This comes to me from Mike Goldman over the internet, and he says this. I'm going to read verbatim. This is his story, not mine. As many of you know, my car was seized a few days ago. 6 months ago, I sent notice to the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, PennDOT, that I was rescinding my driver's license, vehicle registration, license plate, and assorted documentation for fraud. I placed on my car a replacement plate in day glow yellow, noticing all as to my status. I asked PennDOT whether a citizen of Pennsylvania had a right to travel, to own property, and to use property in the course of travel. To each of these questions, I was told yes. I also asked whether exercise of a right could be converted to a crime. To this, I was also told yes. Yet the state persisted in harassing me and refused to acknowledge my status. They recorded my license as suspended for non-payment of a ticket issued for failure to maintain registration. Note that I had never been convicted of so much as a speeding violation. On Saturday, I traveled from Pittsburgh to Columbia, Maryland. That evening, I returned, and at 1:40 in the morning on Sunday, I was pulled over on my way home, just a few blocks from where I live in Wilkinsburg. The police car contained a municipal policeman from Forest Hills, a neighboring borough, and a state police officer. The Forest Hills policeman, who followed me out of his jurisdiction before stopping me, alleged that his probable cause was speeding. I informed the officers clearly that the car in which I was traveling was a private car, not a motor vehicle, that I was a citizen of Pennsylvania engaged in rightful travel, that PennDOT had written me confirming my rights in this regard. They looked over my car, wrote down my chassis number, and returned to their car. Shortly thereafter, I was surrounded by a county sheriff's car, a Wilkinsburg police car, and a tow truck. I was told that my car was to be seized. I asked the Forest Hills cop if he was converting my car. He said yes. I asked if he took full responsibility for the car and its contents. He said yes. I made clear my protest and surrendered the keys. All of this sounds highly traumatic, and I will admit that it was not an experience that I would gladly seek, especially as I am quite fond of my car and very much dislike relying upon others to provide me transportation. But this is a situation for which I was prepared, and the dialogue went almost as well as if scripted. I am now engaging on a multi-pronged defense and a proactive suit against the Commonwealth. I am presently preparing a writ of replevin sepit for conversion to recover the car, a bill of damages for the responsible officer, and a suit against Pennsylvania for sub rosa conversion of title by which they authorize warrantless seizures as repossessions. Remember what I told you? If you pay for something in funny money and not lawful money, you don't own it. The state is repossessing his car because he doesn't own it, not because he didn't register it. Ladies and gentlemen, and that's what you have to understand. You see, if he paid for it in funny money, he must register it, because it doesn't belong to him. It doesn't belong to anybody, as a matter of fact. Belong whoever, to whoever is overseeing the reorganization of the bankruptcy of the United States of America since 1933. And that's the truth of the matter. But let me continue, and that might help him understand where he's at, too. And if he had read the last issue of Veritas, he might understand all this a little bit better. This, he says, of course, excludes all the maneuvering to fight the issued citations, challenging jurisdiction, etc. I have a tiger by the tail, and I don't dare let go. Now, let me read the important part here. Said he, in a suit against Pennsylvania for sub rosa conversion of title by which they authorize warrantless seizures as repossessions. You see, I would bet you any kind of money that he never had a patent to that vehicle. I bet you that the only thing he ever possessed was a certificate of title. And if that's true, he did not own the car, and the state has a right to repossess it if he does not conform to the rules of the rental agreement. All of this is very time-consuming and expensive, he says. For myself, I would not ask for anything. The sacrifices which I make for what I know to be right are mine alone to make. I have chosen them willingly, but in order to engage the state fully, I cannot fight alone. I am relying upon the assistance of a number of other folks who have offered their time and expertise with no guarantee of recompense. I want to be able to give them at least something and cover the necessary legal and related expenses of this effort. So, no matter how much I hate to do so, I am asking for help. Brother, can you spare a dime? Whether it's just $5 or 100, I'd really appreciate it. All donations will be used expressly for legal and necessary expenses of this effort. They will in no way be used by me for living expenses, nor will I have any direct control over the money. All funds will be deposited and dispersed by Rich Lothar. Contributions should be sent to, and here's the thing, Mike Goldman Legal Defense Fund, care of Richard J. Lothar, spelled L-O-E-T-H-E-R, 4136 Lee Manor Road, Allison Park, Pennsylvania, 15101. Once again, Mike Goldman Legal Defense Fund, care of Richard J. Lothar, L-O-E-T-H-E-R, 4136 Lee Manor Road, Allison Park, Pennsylvania, 15101. I do that because I used his story on the air to illustrate a point, and therefore I owe him that little blurb. You can donate or not donate. It's up to you. As it always is. This is Representative Taylor. Well, the important part that I want to get to, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to read Taylor's diatribe. Representative Taylor, if you watch the Waco hearings, you listen to that little... The only word I can think of is pimp. Trying to make anybody who tried to tell the truth look stupid. The only thing that he cared about was whitewashing his lily-livered puppet master, Comrade Clinton. But let me cut to the chase here. The important part of this is that Attorney Larry Beecraft, found that the U.S. Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has decided that the BATF has no domestic jurisdiction. I remember the night that I was on here with Tina and Mark Terry, and then the other night that I was on here with Wayne Benson, and we gave you proof over the air. We read you the law. And for about 3.5 years prior to that, I've been telling you that the BATF has no jurisdiction within the several states. Unfortunately, the ruling of the United States Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals only applies to the Seventh District, Seventh Circuit Court District. That has also been ruled. Attorney Larry Beecraft offered a page from U.S. versus F.J. Vollmer and Nevius One Federal Reporter, third series, page 1511, 1993, Seventh Circuit Court, cite as 11F.3rd, or 3D, 11F.3D, 1511. The court ruled that the BATF has no domestic jurisdiction after the first time imported weapons are sold in the U.S. Read it and draw your own conclusions. You see, they only have authority over weapons entering the United States through Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. That's the only thing we can find in the law. They have no authority anywhere else. If the weapons are properly labeled and they paid their tax, they can come into the United States, and beyond that entry point, the BATF has no further jurisdiction. And that's the truth of the matter. So, if the BATF has no domestic jurisdiction, what were they doing raiding the Branch Davidians in Waco because they were going to commit mass suicide, or because David Koresh was having sex with children, they say, or abusing children, or he had too many wives, or whatever. And if this is all true, ladies and gentlemen, how come they're not raiding all of these Mormon communities that still believe and practice polygamy if David Koresh was such a bad dude? And how come they haven't yet raided the White House? For the crimes of dead in the night, back alley Billy. Also, the NRA nor anyone else was on trial during, you know, when that ruling was made. The actions of government were in question, not Koresh's mistreatment of children, in which case the BATF lacks specific jurisdiction. Obfuscation serves no legitimate purpose. It's from our Pennsylvania station chief. About that. Now I've got to do this one because this is important. I don't know when it was, 2 or 3 years ago, I did a show about people who called in to Prodigy. All of a sudden, discovered that the Prodigy. I don't know, what do you call it, the online service, whatever, was reading their hard disk. And somebody took them to court, and they had to stop that. Well, listen to this, folks. And believe me, if you look at the symbol of Prodigy and the symbol of America Online and all of these things, it shouldn't surprise you a bit. They're all New World Order symbols. Listen to this. I don't usually send out messages like this, as they often deal with unsubstantiated rumor. But in this case, however, I've known about the basic problem ever since an article appeared in Computer Reseller News over a year ago. Now, this is not me talking. Somebody else. Pete Holzman, I believe. I have personally verified the authenticity of the magazine article cited in the message below. I even corrected a misspelling and added a sentence that was left out in the original message forwarded to me. The issue, Windows 95. Windows 95, that's the new upgrade for Windows that's coming up, is designed, ladies and gentlemen, to create an audit report of your hardware and software. If you register online via the Microsoft network, all of the details of your system, unbeknownst to you, will be uploaded to Microsoft. And that's not the half of it, because part of this upload is a reading of all of the directories and files on your hard drive. The original CRN article explained that this is done so that Microsoft and their dealer network will know who in a given area might be interested or have need of various system upgrades. Well, that's a likely excuse. Read chapter 1 of my book, Behold a Pale Horse, entitled Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, and you'll discover the real reason that Microsoft is doing this. And you'll discover the real reason that when you get a warranty card with something that you purchase, it has 3 or 4 pages attached to it of personal questions that they make you think you have to fill out or your warranty won't be valid. But the truth is, you don't have to fill out any of it, and they must honor the warranty. But millions of sheeple every year register everything that they own, their income, how many toilets they have in their house, and all of these personal questions, just like clockwork. And now Microsoft has arranged that if you buy Windows 95, you're going to register everything in your computer, hardware and software and files, whether you know it or not. And most people will never know it because they don't listen to this broadcast. They don't read or they don't have access to USA News Group and AEN on the Internet. Now, it has related hidden features, and they're apparently being independently discovered and verified by a lot of people. This guy says, quote, "I already have privately told a number of people, and I recommend holding off on Windows 95 upgrades until 1996 due to the number of remaining bugs and software incompatibilities. This just helps push things in the same direction." Now, listen to this. Windows 95 warning on comp risks in Information Week. In short, column, page 88, Information Week magazine, May 22, 1995. Quote, "Microsoft officials confirm that beta versions of Windows 95 include a small viral routine called Registration Wizard." How do you like that name? Registration Wizard. We now have a the Magi have created a Registration Wizard. Merlin lives in Windows 95. It interrogates every system on a network, gathering intelligence on what software is being run on which machine. It then creates a complete listing of both Microsoft's and competitors' products by machine, which it reports to Microsoft when customers sign up for Microsoft's network services. Due for launch later this year, customers must actively disable the routine if they don't want it to run. Now, the implications, folks, of this action and the attitude of Microsoft to plan such action beggars the imagination. Big Brother was not some fantasy illusion. He's real. This version of the feature is being advertised as an attempt to thwart software pirates. Bullshit. The final sentence gives pause, however. If it is an anti-piracy measure, why can it be disabled? This sounds like the PR behind the telephone caller ID feature. It is promoted as a way to deal with unwanted callers, but in reality, it is a 100% designed to provide businesses with more marketing information on consumers and provide the network for easy instant phone tapping and the tracing of calls throughout the nation. No more privacy. Apparently, this new Windows 95 feature will be promoted as an anti-piracy measure, when in reality it too is designed for marketing purposes. Big Brother's here, folks. Big Brother is here. And he's here big time. Now, a friend got hold of the beta test of Win95 and set up a packet sniffer between his serial port and the modem. When you try out the free demo time on the Microsoft network, it transmits your entire directory structure in the background to Microsoft. This means that they have a list of every directory and every file on your machine. It would not be difficult to have something like a file request from your system to theirs without you knowing about it. This way they could get a hold of any juicy routines you've written yourself, or any private communications, or private files, or bookkeeping, or anything else, and claim them as their own. If you don't have them copyrighted, they could be forwarded to law enforcement agencies, or anybody else, and used against you. Now, needless to say, I am really upset about this. So spread the word as far and wide as possible. Steer clear of Windows 95. If you've already bought a copy, when you get it, wrap it up. Send it directly to Bill Gates personally, telling you want a refund. and tell him you're not going to accept his scumbag Big Brother products until he cleans up his act. It sucks, is what it is. And now to one of my favorite subjects, Veritas. Veritas, ladies and gentlemen, is the only real newspaper that tells the truth in this country today. It is not a tabloid like the Spotlight. It is a full-size newspaper. In our last issue, it was the special money and finance issue. From front page to back page, everything in it was about money. Where we started, how we got here, where our gold went, what a Federal Reserve note is, what real money is, what is a silver dollar, what does the law say? What happens when you purchase something with a silver dollar? What happens when you purchase something with a Federal Reserve note? It has photographs of all of the real money in the beginning. It has photographs of each time the money changed and how the contract written on the face of the money changed. And it shows on the front page the new $100 bills that has no contract written on it whatsoever. So we have gone full circle. Veritas, ladies and gentlemen, means truth in Latin. Omnia Vincit Veritas. Truth conquers all things. If you'd like to have a copy of the last issue, send us $5 postpaid. The next issue is going to really upset Washington. And remember, Veritas, the only newspaper in the country, delivered personally, by hand, by messenger, to every desk in Washington, D.C., at our expense. So, if you'd like to subscribe, send $55 for 24 issues. Make checks or money orders payable to Veritas, spelled V-E-R-I-T-A-S. Send them to Veritas at P.O. Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. That's Veritas, P.O. Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. Oh, what's that you say? Spotlight is cheaper? Well, then go buy Spotlight, dummy. This is America. I'm not trying to force you to do anything, but if you want this paper, you pay $55 because we don't believe in socialism. Okay? Since we're spending all this money to put this paper on every desk in Washington, D.C., guess what? You're in this battle, you're going to help pay for it. If you don't like it, don't subscribe. Don't read it. But don't bitch to us either if you don't ever find out the truth. Good night, folks, and God bless you all.